I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. What my guest now, Scott Ryan, has done with his new book has provided a great service for fans of late-night television and admirers of David Letterman. The Last Days of Letterman, the final 6 weeks, gives the reader insight into the production of the last 28 episodes of The Late Show with David Letterman. Mr. Ryan interviews writers, directors, and producers of the CBS program and gets the scoop on what it was like in and around the historic Ed Sullivan Theater in New York City and just how memorable moments in that last run of shows were crafted, either spontaneously or produced. I think that's the thing that you get out of the book, is an appreciation of Letterman and how in his professional relationships with fellow comedians or musicians he's an admirer of, how those brilliant moments that might be off the cuff come through from his wit, talent, and timing. Those last 6 weeks featured memorable shows evoking the end of the Johnny Carson Tonight Show in 1992, and that featured touching moments that Letterman was able to have once more with Bill Murray, Martin Short, Barack Obama, Julia Roberts, George Clooney, Bob Dylan, Norm Macdonald, and many others. Scott Ryan is the author of 30-something at 30, an oral history, and Scott Luck Stories. He is the managing editor of the Twin Peaks magazine, The Blue Rose, and the host of the Red Room podcast. There is also The Art of Letterman, a podcast which I'll ask him about. Visit ScottRyanProductions.com and follow him on Twitter at ScottLuckStory. This new book is published by Fayetteville Mafia Press. Its foreword is written by Bill Sheft. Please welcome to the Plant Online program in Columbus, Ohio, Scott Ryan. Mr. Ryan, good morning.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Pretty good yourself. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
So I've had this book for a while now. I ordered it online. But I understand the book has just come out this week. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. We were not sure how we were going to release this book. And we ended up starting a new company called Fayetteville Mafia Press. And so we sold it on our website. But then we ended up getting a distributor, and they asked us to hold it till November 6th. But I said, well, the people that already bought it, I'm going to ship it to as soon as we print it because it's only fair. So that's how you got it early, but in reality, it's coming out everywhere tomorrow.
I see. And so, well, it's been, I have to tell you, I've spent a while with the book now. Because I loved The Late Show. I loved watching Letterman. Not as long as you have, but certainly those 6 weeks were special, remarkable television. That I almost read this book as a sort of catharsis because I've missed him so much.
I know, me too.
For the people you talk to, I mean, that must have been. I don't know. I'm putting words in their mouths, but I mean, you talked to them. But was it a catharsis for them to talk about the end?
Well, I'll tell you. To be honest with you, they didn't want to talk about it. Mm. I sort of had to, you know, convince them. So many of them said nobody cares about the last 6 weeks, and nobody was really interested in what we had done, and I was shocked by that because it's like they didn't know. But if you think about how Dave reacted whenever a guest would say how much they loved him and how much they were going to miss him, you know, he didn't believe it. And I feel like all of them, they just don't know the impact they had on us.
Right, right. And for you, I mean, I mentioned a moment ago, you've watched the show for a long time. He meant a great deal to you. You were a fan going back to late night. Did your relationship with the show, did it change over the years? And I'm curious to know how it did.
Well, yeah, I always say Dave is my TV friend. And he was there for me every day. And I always watched it by myself. So I didn't always watch it when it was on. I taped it a lot of times. And depending on life and children and things. That hour a day was my time that I just, you know, decompress. So for me to lose that it really was reshaping how I situated my day. And it's still hard. I mean, I really miss Dave.
Yeah, and, you know, reading the book, even though it seems like it's not that long ago, it's about 3 years or so, 2015 really does seem like a much simpler time, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, and watching these episodes, when I was writing about it, I did most of the studying of the episodes in 2017, towards the end of 2017. And they just, it reminds me of Jurassic Park. You know how they find that DNA frozen in that goop? Mm-hmm. And that is what I felt like. It's like this time period of life when we didn't know how good we had it was just frozen in these 28 episodes, and it's just gone now.
As a television show, I mean, it really, I mean, it... Late night, I mean, everyone points to Johnny Carson as the standard, if you will. But Letterman in his time, from the late night show to the end in 2015, I mean, it really elevated it to an art. And we see that in these 6 weeks, don't we, about how to put together a show like that.
Yes, and I think, of course, Johnny is going to be that standard. And honestly, Johnny was Dave's standard. Mm-hmm. And the director, Jerry Foley, of Late Show, he told me that when they reached a moment where they weren't sure what to do, they would ask themselves, what would Johnny do? And I think that was important to Dave. But I think Johnny, while, I mean, he lived in a different time when there were three networks, and honestly no competition, uh-huh. where Dave really had to compete with The Daily Show and The Tonight Show and so many places, let alone phones and the internet, and he still was able to amass a fan base and make a difference. And so I think that was probably a more Herculean effort than Johnny ever really had to do.
In those last shows, I mean, the last show itself, I mean, Letterman had former presidents paying tribute to him, and they went late, even though that show in 1992, the Lost Carson show, it's a wonderful, say, hour of television. Letterman was able to, say, I guess, better Johnny in a couple of ways, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things that I did point out, that, you know, the president did not send video tributes to Johnny. I mean, we kind of lived in a different political time, but I thought that was very impressive. And Mike Buskowitz, who was a segment producer on The Late Show, that was his doing. I mean, he basically booked all the political guests, and they worked on that for a year to get that. To get all those presidents and get everyone's. And Mike tells a great story in the book about basically working with the Bushes and the Clintons and how they got all of them. And they were supposed to get Jimmy Carter, but he was ill, and mm-hmm. he just couldn't film it. So that's why they didn't get Carter. He didn't pass. He just wasn't feeling well.
Yeah, he was dealing with cancer, I think, at the time, wasn't he?
Yeah.
It was brain cancer.
So,
yeah.
I mean, it's understandable.
Yeah.
But... they could have got him as well.
How you wrote an oral history of 30 something, which is a previous book of yours. So I guess is that how did you have the idea to do the same for these 6 weeks for the end of the Letterman show?
Yeah, I mean, I really liked how the 30 something book came out, and I learned a lot from it. And 30 something was a show that meant a lot to me. And Letterman was. So at the time, I was looking for my next project, but I never thought I would get access to anyone. I mean, I thought, how am I ever going to get anyone from The Late Show? And it all started with Barbara Gaines over Twitter. I kept contacting her, and eventually she gave me an interview. But I knew that I was going to have to explain the episode. So, you know, I don't consider this Letterman book a straight oral history, because I do talk about the episodes. So I'm in there a little bit, but they are sort of colored with their memories, the staffer's memories. But I think that's a cool way to do the book. And I know you're up in Vancouver, so I will say that what I want to start on now is an X-Files one. That's what I'd like my third one to be, so I'm just starting work on that now.
Yeah, I'm amazed at, because we grew up with the show around us being shot here. And you know, people in this part of the world are fans of say, science fiction, if you will. We forget just what an impact that had throughout the world, even.
Yeah, and I've actually interviewed an actor who lives up in Vancouver, so I've got my first interview for it, and it was fun when I heard that that's where you were from. I thought, hey, that's where I'm focusing my next book on, if I can get the interviews. I mean, it's still in the beginning process.
Yeah, I talk to theater actors all the time, and everyone almost has a credit on that show. I mean, it certainly had an impact on say the theater and the television and movie production that local actors appear in. So it is well. I wish you luck with that. Back to Letterman. You mentioned Barbara Gaines, and once you had her, it seemed that everybody fell in line and wanted to talk to you. Is that correct?
Yes, I worked for 2 years to get the Barbara Gaines interview. And then once I got her, I think I interviewed her on like August 4th, 2017. And I pretty much got all of them by September 20th. So, I mean, I really was doing, there was 1 week where I had an interview a day.
Really?
And once she gave the approval, because I think they were very reluctant because they weren't sure what was my take going to be. What was I really looking for? But I don't do books to hurt anyone's feelings. I never want someone to regret speaking to me. And I also, so far, have only written about things that I love. So I'm just trying to find the truth and their memories on how they crafted this art. And I think once they realized that, then the doors opened. Everyone was willing to talk to me.
So the backbone were these 28 episodes, and so how would you go about your conversations with them? Did you have specific questions that you asked each of the people that you talked to?
Yes, I always started with, how did you find out that Dave was going to retire? And those answers really become the second chapter in the book, which is about him announcing his retirement. And so, since I talk to writers, you know, stage managers, people from different levels, you really get what that day was like and how the information flew out through the rest of the staff. And that also sets up what a family it is. I mean, that's what you really get from this book, is that they all cared about each other. So I would start with that, and that would sort of put them in their mindset of reminiscing and kind of feeling bad because they lost their jobs. And then I would basically just ask them about their day. So whoever I had, I would focus on, what was your task? What did you do every day? And then, you know, it would just sort of spill out from there. I never asked anyone about days. I didn't press about other people. It was just like, why was your job so important? And from that, you know, the answers that are in the book, because that sort of gets everyone thinking about it. And then from that, they shared some wonderful, beautiful stories.
Yeah, there are things here, as I'm reading the book, that seem to just come from them there must have been a couple times where you didn't even ask them something and they shared something that you had no expectation to get from them, say, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, that would happen all the time. And then what is nice about talking to a bunch of people in a row is, you know, if somebody tells you a story, then I can ask them about that. You know, an example is P-Boy. So, you know, someone in the audience asked a question about P-Boy, which was this person that used to run through the audience and throw pee.
Yeah.
And so once I knew how that came about, then if I'm talking to a writer, I could say, so, you know, what did you have to do when someone wanted P-Boy? And someone might say, oh, I was the one that remembered what song we used, and, you know, we had to get this costume, Paul had to learn the music. So there would be trends that would come up, and that's how in the book sometimes it feels like people are talking back and forth to each other, even though I did all the interviews separately.
Mm-hmm. The book doesn't have sort of, I guess, the gossip that I think a lot of people might expect, but from your position, you really wanted this to be a tribute, a love letter, if you will.
Yes. It's not that, but the reason I hate saying that is because then it seems like there was gossip and I left it out.
Mm.
There was no gossip. Nobody told me some story about how Dave, you know, threw a frying pan at someone and stormed out of the building. Like, there was none of that.
Uh-huh.
These are all people who loved David Letterman, and they spent their whole career working for them. And that's what they shared, and they loved that job. So, yes, there is no dirt in the book, and I didn't ask about any dirt, but you know, that isn't what we have here. I mean, it might be a different book if I interviewed 25 people who were fired over 30 years. But these are people who stayed all the way to the end, even when they knew they were going to be out of work in 6 weeks.
But I am curious about Letterman in terms of how he was at the end. Because he seems a very different person, say, from early in his career, or if we've read stuff, say, that Meryl Marco's written, or even Bill Carter's books. He just seems at ease in a different way. And I guess we saw that in the last episode, especially when he brought his family out. Did you get that sense
sure,
that he was a different guy at that point?
I definitely agree, but then also think about that he was on the air for 33 years. I mean, I know that I, at 48, am 100% different than I was at 24. I mean, and that's not even that amount of time. So I think he just matured. He's had a family. He understood where to put his career. I think he appreciated these people who had given their career life to him, and I don't know. I also think that if you want to twist things, not you, but if I wanted to, I could have twisted and tried to make, you know, there's a really great story in the book about the end montage, and, you know, I won't ruin it for readers because I think it's a surprising tale.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I could have tried to twist their words so it seemed like Barbara Gaines was mad at Dave through all of that. But it was about working together. So I don't know if Dave has really changed or if different writers tried to twist it. Like, this is an oral history, so I don't change their words. It really is their words.
Yeah, some of the stories we read near the end of the book talk about getting certain people to appear, and I'm wondering in the course of the interviews you did, I mean, there were three people that we heard a lot about in the press, whether they would come on the show in the end, and I mean, did anybody mention, say, Richard Simmons, Jay Leno, or Brian Williams?
No, we did not ever talk about those three people. The person that would have really answered that question would have been Sheila Rogers. She was the booking agent. And she was my second interview. And she was very reluctant to talk to me. She really didn't want to. And she only did because Barbara Gaines sort of vouched for me. So Sheila, I think, was very protective. And even when I would try to ask, like I asked her the question about why didn't Regis get a chance to sit down. That sort of surprised me, since I have a walk-on.
Uh-huh.
But I thought Regis might be there, and she was just always really proper, so I don't think she would have necessarily answered about Richard or Brian Williams. And just for me personally, I had made the decision that the words Jay Leno was not going to be in the book, and they're not. So I would have never asked that question because I don't know Jay Leno, but I would say he's not my favorite person, and I didn't want him to be in the book. I wanted the book to be about Dave.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I hated the Leno show, and so that was a. Now that you mention it, it's a great relief. What was there anyone that you wanted to talk to that you didn't get a chance to talk to for this book?
Yes, there were quite a few. I mean, it's sort of funny because I'm just getting started in this career. I've been lucky to do, like you said, 30-something books, and I do a Twin Peaks magazine, and I'm, you know, I'm making a start. But by no means do I have a way to reach people. So it's very hard for me to actually get interviews. It takes a lot of convincing. I would have loved to have Amy Sedaris. She was my favorite Letterman guest.
Right.
I think she could have added something to the book. I would have loved to have Regis Philbin. Those are kind of celebrities that also were kind of part of the family, and I think they would have added. On the staff, Jude Brennan was an executive producer. She was probably the person I didn't get that I really wished I had, but she said no. I mean, she did know about the book, and she declined. And the same with Nancy Agostini, who, like, was the executive producer that stood on the floor at the podium for the last 6 weeks. She also declined to speak with me. And other people said they're just really shy and private, and they just don't give interviews. But what are you going
to
do?
Yeah, if you had the chance to talk to Dave, say, what would you ask him?
It's funny because everyone, when I was working on the book, they would always say, you know, are you going to talk to Dave? And I kind of, I mean, of course I would. I'd like to talk to him now. I've never met him, and of course I would love to. But, you know, I was kind of glad I didn't because I think that would have changed the whole book. If I would have got Dave or Paul and even Alan or Biff, it would change what the book is about because the book is really about these unsung heroes that did the work of the show. But if I really met Dave, I think I would have liked to have talked to him about the music because I think in working on it, what I really learned is Dave was so integral in picking those songs.
Right.
And I didn't notice it when I watched it the first time, but when I've seen these 28 episodes many, many times now, and I realized the songs he picked really were telling a story. I mean, Keep on the Sunny Side, Will the Circle Be Broken, Stand By Me, America, American Pie. They're all positive views of America, humanity, and it really is telling a story. And I think I would have liked to have talked to Dave about that and how conscious was he when he was picking these songs. Because I feel like it was his way of really telling us how he felt about leaving.
Yeah, and it really, reading it 3 years later, as I said a moment ago, it's a very different time and a different, your country's in a different place than it was 3 years ago. And the music, the music choices themselves, I think really, they were just more than songs that he liked listening to or liked singing to his son.
Right, yeah. And, I mean, President Obama and Mrs. Obama are guests in there. And I really struggled with those chapters because it was hard for me not to make political commentary. I wanted to so badly, but I refrained because I'm like, you know what, not pointing it out is going to point it out better. And just quoting what they both said and how eloquently they spoke and how much the country and humanity meant to them really points out how that is absent in America now.
So when you read in the days after the show ended, like a lot of us on Twitter, that the set was being hauled off and the theater was being gutted, what did you think as a fan?
I thought, why didn't I get in my car and drive to New York City and get the dumpster? And I still think it.
Yeah.
I still think, what was I thinking? I guess we didn't know. It was probably too late. But I'm like, dang, I wish I had part of that. But it was horrible. I mean, it's mind-boggling how much CBS didn't care.
Mm.
And we're just moving on. And, I mean, I get that it's a business. I get all of those things. But you should have known better than to have the optics of less than 12 hours from the end of the show to have the set sticking out of a dumpster on Broadway.
Mm.
That is not a tribute to someone who, at the minimum, made your network a load of money. And it really did upset the staff. It was hard for them because, you know, they all lost their jobs that day. And Barbara Gaines tells a story. She went back in on Friday, and they had literally spray-painted out above her desk because they were going to take that wall out. And she snapped that picture and gave it to me, and it's in the book so people can see it. And it's just so sad, and it's just such a commentary on, you know, up, it's over, move on.
Yeah. I mean, elements of that set, I mean, it could easily have been in a museum, right?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I mean, and even let's look at it a completely different way. What if you auctioned it off for charity?
Yeah.
I mean, there was, you know, there is a lot of things you could have done except to throw it away. And and honestly, I'm very excited about this book. I'm very proud of the book. But really, to me, the important part is like making sure that people remember what happened in those 6 weeks and with them, because it's like we forget everything in a second now.
Right.
It's only 3 years ago.
Right, yeah.
I mean, it's not even that long ago.
So the people that you interview in the book, have they read the book, have they?
Yes, I believe. I don't know if everyone has. I mean, Brian Tetta, who was the segment producer, he sent me a very nice email and said that it brought everything back to him, and he was very moved by it. Jill Goodwin, who was a writer, she said that when she read Chapter 2, which is, again, about Dave announcing his retirement, that she had a pit in her stomach the whole time because it just made her remember that day. And everyone has been so kind. Bill Sheff is out promoting the book, which is crazy. I was just on the radio with him in New York City. And so, you know, I haven't got any negative feedback, but there's nothing negative in this book, and it's just what people said. So, I mean, I don't twist or turn anything. It's just laid out just for people to experience these 6 weeks.
Yeah, well, one of the people that you talked to in the book at length is Rupert G. of the Hello Deli. Some of the funniest segments in the history of the Late Show were the ones that Dave did with him, and it's marvelous reading your conversation with him. For one, because he's I guess you were interviewing him in the deli and he was working, right?
Yeah. It was, and it's actually one of my favorite parts of the book. I'm glad you're bringing it up. But I'm in the deli interviewing him. And he's making a sandwich, and we're talking, and then he's like, wait, I don't want to burn the bacon. And to me, it was such a moment, and I thought, I wanted to put it in the book, but I also, like, it's funny, but also it's telling you, like, this is just someone who has a job, and he's still working, and he is the nicest man ever, and he's sell selling my book in the Hello Deli. So you can go to the Hello Deli and buy the book. And to me, that's like the coolest thing ever.
Yeah.
Like, I'll take that over any chain bookstore in the world. So you can go there and Rupert will sign it. And so that's really cool. He's a very, very nice guy.
And the thing that I got out of the conversation you had with him, and because as I said, when you watch those segments, and people can go to YouTube and watch them, and they can watch a lot of the moments that you talk about in the book on YouTube, by the way, he was a marvelous comedian without being a comedian, if you will. He knew timing, and you get the sense of what it was like to do those segments with Dave from the conversation you had, and it's marvelous insight because he's literally just a civilian, right? He's not in show business.
Yeah.
And yet he was so effective in that role that he played on the show.
Well, I think it's Steve Young, who was one of the writers, that said he's like the greatest straight man. Yeah. And that Steve Young would just laugh so hard at those skits. They said the writers just loved when they had Rupert. And yeah, I mean, Fun with Rupert was one of my all-time favorite things they did, which was they would send Rupert out in a disguise with a microphone, and Dave would say what Rupert had to say to these people. And you know, they talked about how you would hear Dave say it in Dave's voice, but then when you'd hear it in Rupert's voice, it's like funny, even though you just heard the line,
because
of the different delivery. And it really is a study of the different ways of being a straight man. And I think Rupert, he might go down in history as the greatest straight man ever. Carl Reiner will have to step aside there because we got Rupert to be here.
And that's what's wonderful about the show is in your book is that you do provide the spotlight to these unsung heroes, if you will, these people that really, I mean, day to day, really drove the show.
Yeah, and that's what I'm interested in just as a writer. I have a bit of production, and I've done a lot of things, and I know that it's not always that person that's standing up front that you think is going to give you the real information. You know, a lot of people have said, well, you should reach out to Julia Roberts or George Clooney and get them.
Yeah.
But, you know, they have their say on the show. They're not really going to give you the insight that you get from the stage manager who was standing back there and watching the stuff. Like, Bill Murray in the second to last episode, came out in a cape. And, you know, it's interesting to hear the stage manager talk about how now he's got to clean that stage before Bob Dylan gets up there because you don't want Bob Dylan to slip on cake.
Yeah.
To me, that's a much more interesting story because it makes you see how things work over hearing what Bill Murray thought about crawling in a cake.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. The other thing, too, you mentioned Julia Roberts, that she was cold and she needed to borrow someone's coat. She did. She borrowed a Stafford's coat, and then at the end of the show, left with it.
Yeah, she took it home. And it was like a really old coat because, you know, you get a coat. Every year they would have coats, and that means you worked that year.
Yeah.
So longer you're there, you know, you might have different color coats, different designs. And so it was an old one. And I don't blame Julia. I'd have done the same thing. I'd have taken that coat. Every writer I talked to, I tried to get me a coat. I really did. It never worked. But I kept saying, because they'd be like, oh, I was there for 27 years. I've got 27 of those Letterman jackets. And I'd be like, I like jackets. Sometimes I put one on when I get chilly.
Yeah.
But it didn't work.
Well, you got to be Julia Roberts. I'm sure they'd hand over all 27 to her, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I'm sure they would.
the Art of the Letterman podcast, when does that start?
Well, I'm not sure about that. We were moving forward really well, and then it was going to be through a university.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not sure what happened to the funding, and so it's been tabled for this year. So maybe in 2019. So I'm not really sure. I haven't heard about it in a while. I snuck it in the book because it seemed imminent at the time, but now I'm not 100% sure.
The, I mean, do you have an idea of what that would be if it were to get off the ground, say?
Yeah, I mean, what it's supposed to be is interviewing people who had a say on Late Night. So not Late Show, but the original.
Mm.
And just talking to different writers, different guests, different people who got the show off the ground, and focusing on Late Night. Which would be interesting for me because, honestly, when it debuted, I was 12, so I was not watching it. So it would be a learning experience for me.
Yeah.
So I hope it happens, but it was, I haven't heard from them in a while, so I'm not really sure what's going on, and I've been, like, so busy getting the book out, and so I'm not sure. But I snuck it in the book because I'm hoping it happens.
Yeah, and then I do too, because I think it would be, as this book is, a wonderful insight into important television. And I think, well, that's what you've done with this book. One other person I want to ask you about, Don Giller. And I think the world of him because of what he's done on YouTube. You got to know him in the course of writing the book, is that right?
Through the internet. So I know him 2018 style, through Facebook message and the Facebook group. Yeah, he was very helpful. I had all the episodes on my DVR, but some of them got cut off, and I wanted to put, like, the Late Show tags. And so I needed to have the very front of every episode and the very end because of the way I was setting up the book with the things that Alan said. So Don was very nice to help me send me a couple episodes that I needed to get the beginning and ends of, just so I could have, because if I was missing one of the Worldwide Pants tags, then I couldn't do it on any of them, and it was making me nerve-wracking. But the thing that's really cool is when Don read the book, I was really nervous about it, because I thought, oh, if he hates this book, I'm done for.
Uh-huh.
And he sent me a message and said, this is the Letterman book I wish I would have written.
Mm.
And I mean, that is a pretty darn good compliment, so I'm very thankful for that.
And for people listening to us, I mean, he's important because he is, and there's a New York Times article on him, he is really the custodian of these clips. I mean, he doesn't work for Worldwide Pants, but he's kept, is it all or nearly all of the Letterman shows?
I believe he has every single episode now.
Yeah, and a lot of them are online on YouTube, and they've managed to stay online, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, he does a great job because, you know, there's so many legal issues, which is all ridiculous. It makes me so angry when people are that way. Like, who cares if someone goes out there and watches it on YouTube? Like, it aired on television 30 years ago. Like,
yeah.
And someone's still worried about making a buck off it. Like, let it go. Like, let's just enjoy art for art's sake and not worry about making a dime off it. So he does a good job of fighting whenever they try to make him take anything down. And I mean, what he's done is incredible. We're going to do an event at the 92nd Y in New York City on March 28th, a Letterman event, where I'm going to get a lot of people in the book, and we're going to do a panel.
Uh-huh.
And I'm hoping that I can get clips from Don at that event. So I think he's going to help me with that. So he's a great resource if you're doing Letterman stuff.
Yeah. I so enjoyed this book and have enjoyed talking to you. I could talk all day with you, Scott, about your book and about Letterman and this chunk of television that, as I said a moment ago, is important. Congratulations on this book. I hope it really does well for you because it is a book that people deserve to read.
Oh, thank you very much. Now, I have a question for you.
Sure.
What was your favorite moment in the last 6 weeks? Was there a guest or something that really means something to you?
I love, I don't know if this is because I'm Canadian, but I mean, I love Martin Short. I loved it when he came on, and then, you know, that theme music that Paul would play, that was the theme song to, it was a documentary in the 60s, Hollywood in the Movies or something like that. And he'd come out, and then he'd, you know, thanks for remembering all the BS that he'd throw at Letterman about looking so good, and then doing the song at the end. I mean, you know, looking back at those last 6 weeks, I mean, I remember when seeing it that night that it aired and thinking, I'm going to miss this.
Well, you know, because we've bonded and we've become such good friends now, I will share with you that when I saw that episode, that episode is Martin Short and the musical guest is Nora Jones.
Right, right.
When I saw that episode the very first time in 2015, when it was over, I full-on cried for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Because, and I didn't cry at the last episode. I mean, it wasn't when it was over, but it was Martin Short and Nora Jones episode, because that is when I mourned what I was going to lose, and for the exact reasons you're saying, because I've seen Martin Short on other talk shows, and hey, Martin Short's probably the funniest person.
Oh, yeah, I think if you did a list of the top 10 talk show guests, and going back to, say, Steve Allen and Jack Parr, you'd have to put Martin Short in that top 10, wouldn't you?
Yeah, oh, definitely. And many of the people I talked to for the book said that as well. But Martin Short is never as good on another show as he was on Letterman.
Yeah.
It worked, his shtick worked best on Letterman and Letterman's audience. And I knew I was going to miss that. And so I don't think it's that you're Canadian. I think that it's that you're a Letterman fan, and that's why you're drawn to that. I think that's one of the best episodes they did out of all 28.
Yeah, and you talk in the book about just, this is the experience of a fan. I mean, you watch this show regularly, and then you discover Nora Jones as the rest of the world does in her first appearance, and then in this last appearance, I mean, she does the same song, doesn't she?
Yeah, she sings the same song, and she does a little slower version. And while she was singing it, I realized, well, I have all her records now because I'm a vinyl person, and I have them all, and I listen to them, and I was like, I got this from Dave. And I'm going to miss that now. You know, Dave was like the ultimate Spotify suggesting playlist. And I thought, you know, who else did I get from Dave throughout the years?
Yeah.
So it really was, that is where I had my loss, was during that episode.
Yeah. By the way, Scott, the people around you, what's their relationship to Letterman? Because you have such an avowed relationship with Dave.
Well, this is going to sound horrible, but I'm going to tell it anyway. But, you know, I have twins, and I was a stay-at-home dad, and we kid each other all the time. That is my parenting style. Well, when my kids would get mad at me, they would say, you know, David Letterman's going to die someday. Because that was their way of hurting me. And this was years before the book. And I would kind of be proud of them, to be honest with you. Because I thought, look at them, they really know how to get to me.
Yeah.
And then I would say, he is not. He's going to be here forever. So the family knew. I mean, they understood that was my time, and you know, now the kids are in college and stuff like that. They really could care less about the book or whatever. But I don't know. I mean, my wife and I went to see Dave about four times whenever we'd go to New York City, and she's a big Dave fan now and stuff. So. Everyone knows.
Yeah.
They understand.
Yeah.
Well, you know, like I said, I do a magazine on Twin Peaks, which I love. So they're sort of used to me being obsessive about the things that I like. So.
Yeah. Well, that's
part
Well, that's good, yeah. Scott, I so enjoyed this conversation. Thanks for this, and as I said, continued good luck with the book.
Well, thank you so much, and people can go out to lastdaysofletterman.com and order the book, and I can sign it for you, and I really appreciate being on the show, and I'm so glad you enjoyed it. I mean, I did this book for someone like you who loves Dave like I do.
Visit lastdaysofletterman.com and, of course, scottryanproductions.com. The Twitter handle is @ScottLuckStory. The book is called The Last Days of Letterman, The Final 6 Weeks. Fayetteville Mafia Press is its publisher. Scott Ryan joined me on the line from Columbus, Ohio, in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.